Introducing Eli Weber at 9:01 sharp on Tuesday morning. It was a zip along with Zoom with the Friday Gishkolo. And Rabbi Eli will give us a follow up share with the Sefer HaMitzvot. Take it away, Eli.
Thank you. This week's topic is a mitzvah, but I want to come at it from a different perspective because I want to tie it to something in this week's parasha. I want to deal with the issue of women and bris milah, but only because it teaches us many things about the mitzvah itself of bris milah, but also it's not just sourced in this week's parasha, and it's not as if, there's some random reference to it in this week's parasha. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu's son was circumcised by his wife. You know, it's not a drasha. It's not a medrash. It's some of the most difficult psukim in the whole Torah that appear in this week's parasha. And because this week's parasha has so much stuff in it, and it's so fascinating, I feel like perhaps, it doesn't get as much focus as it should. Now, let's be clear. I want to talk, at least at first, about the parasha, what's called the parasha of the Malon, the hotel. The Motel 6 that Moshe stayed at on his way from Midian to Mitzrayim, and what in the world it means to us, and what can it teach us about Bris Milah. So if we start, let me pull up the sheet. Okay. One second. It's probably too small for people to see. I don't know if I could do something about it. Let's see. One second. All right. It could be better, but we'll work with this.
Bruce to see, but we can see.
Okay.
I'll squint.
Hibnupsukim. Now, first, let's put them in context. Moshe's run away from Egypt. He spent many, many years in hiding, and he's in Midian. He has one son, we think. Maybe he has one and a half, but we know for sure that Gershom has already been born. He's tending his sheep, and God appears to him in the burning bush. It's important to remember that. And God tells him, I'm sending you to Egypt to redeem my people. And Moshe resists. And he resists, aggressively. It's not just, the gabbai comes to you in shul and asks you if you'd be the chazan, and you're like, well, I don't know. And then, but it's clear that you want it. It's clear that Moshe doesn't want it. He's almost disrespectful to God in his resistance. Okay, but he says yes. And then he takes his family and he's on the way to Egypt. And then really one of the most bizarre Parshios in the Torah. Vahi baderech b'malon. Again, he stops at the Red Roof Inn, at the Motel 6, at Holiday Inn. I don't know exactly what that means. Vayifkisheyu Hashem. And God meets him. Now again, the God who just told him, I am sending you to Egypt to redeem my people. He resisted and God said, no, it's got to be you. And God meets him in the motel, vayivakesh hamito, and he wants to kill him. Okay, now it's possible. There's a lot of pronouns here, so just point out the obvious. The way we read this, it's talking about Moshe, but at least there's some possibility that it's somebody else. When you just read the psukim, vayi baderech b'malon, I guess that's them. It has to be them. God me vayivakesh hamito. So who else could it be? I suppose it could be the baby. Right? Moshe now has two sons, Gershom and Eliezer. Eliezer has just been born, at least Rashi thinks so, and the Medrash thinks so. We'll come to that in a second. Okay, so maybe God wants to kill him. Vatikach tziporat sor. Tzipora takes, a flint, a sharp rock, whatever. Vatichrot et orlat bina. And she gives a bris milah. She cuts off the orla, the foreskin of her son. Now, again, of her son, you know, there's every reason to assume her son means the newborn son. But again, you have pronouns here. It could be the other son. On the assumption, one second, Bruce, on the assumption that he never got a bris milah. That's a medrash. Okay, vatagal raglav. And I guess the foreskin falls to the floor in front of him. Vatomer ki chasan domi matali. You, presumably Moshe, are, you know, a groom, a bloody groom to me. Although maybe it's the baby. Vayiref mimenu. Then I guess God lets Moshe go, or the Malach lets Moshe go. Az amra chatan damim lamulot. Then she said, no, you are, again, you are a bloody bridegroom to me. And then the parsha continues like nothing happened, and Moshe gets to Mitzrayim. But, you know, these three psukim are fascinating in the narrative. And again, the halachic point we'll talk about in a minute is it seems pretty obvious in the pasuk, Tzipora gave a bris milah to one of Moshe's sons. So, you know, if you're having a discussion with somebody about is it proper, is it a mitzvah, can a woman be a mohelet, I suppose, you know, you couldn't do worse than point out that Tzipora was a mohelet, you know, for Moshe's children. Now, let's just look at Rashi for a second, and then you could talk. Vayhi baderech bamalon. So Rashi says, Moshe baderech bamalon. Rashi immediately identifies the subject of the story, or the person who God, kivyachol, wants to kill as Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayivakesh hamito. He says, hamalach lemoshe. It's not God. It's a malach. Hard to know what the significance of that is, because malachim only act at God's request. And also, if you go back to the pasuk, it says vayifkisheu Hashem vayivakesh hamito. It certainly reads as if it's God. Okay, now what's the problem? So Rashi tells us what we've all learned our whole lives. What was the problem? Lefi shalom mal et Eliezer beno. His youngest son Eliezer had just been born, and he doesn't have a bris milah. And God is angry. And because Moshe tarried, Moshe delayed the bris milah of his son, God wants to kill him. Again, another question, as far as we know, not circumcising your son is not a chiv misa. But again, you could say, you know, Moshe is Moshe Rabbeinu, and so he's held to a higher standard. Tanya. Amr of Yossi. Rav Yossi says, Chas v'shalom lo nitrashel. God forbid, he's Moshe Rabbeinu. He didn't delay. Ella. Amar emol ve'etzei laderech. He said, well, if I give my son a bris milah and then I take him traveling to Egypt, sakanahi letinok ad shlosha yamim. It's dangerous for the first 3 days. He may die. Emol ve'esheh shlosha yamim. Let's say I give him a bris milah and then I wait at home 3 days. How can I do that? Hakadosh Baruch Hu Tzivani, Leich Shuv Mitzrayim. I've been commanded to return to Egypt. Well, so why is he punished? It seems like there was a reason to do either one. Mipnei man ne'enash lefi shenit aseg bamalon tchila. So why was Moshe punished? Because when he got to the motel, I don't know, he ordered room service first. He did other things other than immediately circumcising his son. It's an explanation, but it's hard to be satisfied by this. You know, the story is really as bizarre a story as we've ever come across. And you know, and again, just to review, God tells Moshe he's the chosen one. He's going to take the Jews out of Egypt. Then he wants to kill him. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't give his son a bris milah, hard to understand. His wife gives the son a bris milah and saves his life. Okay, which son? It's hard to know. Who's being discussed? It's hard to know. Okay, those are the questions we have from the story. And I'm sorry to say up front, I want to spend our time talking about women and bris milah. So a lot of these questions we'll have to leave unanswered. But I think it's really critical to raise them. And again, during the course of the week and on Shabbos, these are things we can all look at. Hey, Bruce, you had a question? Yes.
Yeah. Have you seen anywhere that this is a cut and paste where it's from some other time frame and it's simply in and out of the moment, but it might be from some other period of time?
No. Not only haven't I seen it, it would seem wrong, because God tells him to travel, and then the pasuk says "Vahi baderech," and then he's traveling. So I don't see why, you know, whenever you say that what Bruce is saying with his cute joke about cut and paste, which we noticed but didn't laugh at because it wasn't worthy, there is an idea of ein mukdam muchar b'Torah. You know, the Ramban thinks it's not true, but Rashi uses it from time to time. But that doesn't mean, Bruce, there's no order. It would mean that sometimes the Torah changes the order for a particular reason. Here, there doesn't seem to be a particular reason. I'm not familiar with anybody who says that. And to be honest with you, I don't know how it would help.
No, just the ages of the people. It means Moshe is 80. How old his wife is. I'm not sure how long they're married. It suggests he's having a child only now, when he might have been there for quite a while to support us. So.
Correct. Well, I'll just tell you as a side point. It's interesting, but it's worth noticing. And it's helpful when you look at the parashios. The Ramban says, you know, when it says at the beginning of this week's parasha, Vayhi bayamim harabim ha'em, vayamat melech mitzrayim, vayayanchu b'nei yisrael min ha'avodah, vatal shavatam el olim, vayizaku, they call out to God. The Ramban says, what's bayamim harabim ha'em? He says, well, let's look at it. Moshe grows up, and the Torah says he grows up and he goes out. He sees what his you know, brothers are going through. And on that day, he kills the Egyptian. On the next day, you know, he meets the Jews who are fighting, and they tell on him to Paro. And the Ramban says he immediately has to run away. So speculates the Ramban, how old is Moshe? And he lays out, he says he could be as young as 12. He doesn't see him being more than 20, which means Moshe is gone for 60 years. But then the Ramban says something else interesting. He's gone for at least 60 years, maybe longer, maybe 68 years. Now the Ramban says something different, something interesting. He says, even though it kind of sounds that way in the Psukim, it's not true that Moshe immediately went to Midian. He has textual support for this also, but he says, if you're being pursued by the ruler of Egypt, you don't go to a neighboring country, move in, and stay there for 60 years. He says Moshe Rabbeinu spent the first years, meaning 40 years, 50 years, 55 years, hard to know, running from Paro, moving from place to place. Eventually, at the end of that period of time, he gets to Midian, and he marries Tzipora. So to answer Bruce's question, it could be that they were married only for 2 or 3 years. It's not at all clear. Okay, there we are. But if there's one thing that seems obvious to us from the Psukim, it's that a woman gave a bris milah. Now, I suppose you could reject any halachic source, any halachic proof of this to say, look, it's before Matan Torah. It's a story that we don't fully understand. But the Gemara takes it seriously, or at least partially seriously. Look at the misnumbered source number 2. Gemara Navodah Zarah Chav Zayin Amud Aleph says as follows. Itmar. Minayin lemila ba'oved kachavim shehi psula. How do you know that a bris milah done by a Gentile is not a bris milah? Doru bar papa mishmei derav amar. Because the pasuk says va'atat briti tishmor. Presumably va'atat briti tishmor means my covenant. My covenant is made with the Jewish people, not with Gentiles. Now, what would that tell us about the mitzvah of bris milah? Now we get into halacha. What would that tell us about the mitzvah of bris milah? Anybody? Okay, to me, what it tells me is there's something more than just not having an arla, right? As a surgeon comes and removes the arla, he happens to be a non-Jew. So
why is that not a bris milah? The guy, the baby doesn't have an arla anymore. So the answer is it's not. There's something about the process because the pasuk says vatat briti tishmar. Rabbi Yochanan says no, a different source. Himol yimol. There's a double lashon. Himol yimol, which presumably means a person who has a bris milah is obligated in the mitzvah of bris milah. Now, just to get the context, where are these psukim stated? The answer is, cleverly enough, right in the next source, in Bereishis Perek Yud Zayin. But it's important to realize, perhaps, that Bereishis Perek Yud Zayin is when Avraham gets the mitzvah of bris milah, and he gives a bris milah to Yishmael. This is well before Yitzchak is born. You know, our instinct is, oh, the mitzvah of milah was given when Yishmael needed the bris milah. The answer is no, it was given 13 years before that. Hear the psukim. Vayomer Elokim al Avraham, va'ata et briti tishmar. Again, that's the first source. That's Rav Papa Mishmei Derav. It's a covenant given to Jews. Atav v'zarecha acharecha l'dorotam, you and your children forever. Psukim continue. Zot briti asher tishmeru beini uveinechem uvein zarecha acharecha himo lachem kol zachar. Okay, etc., etc. When do you do this? Pasuk Yud Bet uben shmonat yamim himo lachem kol zachar l'dorotechem. Everybody in your house. And then you have the second source. Yud Gimel. Himol yimol yulid beitcha miknas kaspecha vaita briti bivsachem livrit olam. Circumcise, you should certainly circumcise all the male members of your household, and my covenant will be, you know, in that place on their bodies. So two sources, vatat briti tishmor, himol yimol. Now last pasuk, just because it'll come up later, I hope. Va'orel zachar asher lo yimol et b'sar arlato. But a person who does not circumcise himself, v'nichrita hanefesh ahim me'ameha et briti hefar, that person is punished with kares because he has cut himself off from my people. Okay? This is, of course, one of only two mitzvot aseh in the Torah, the punishment for which is kares. One is bris milah, the other one is karma pesach. Otherwise, the punishment of kares only applies to lo tases. It does not apply to ases. Okay? So far in the Gemara, it's clear that a Gentile cannot do the mitzvah of bris milah, either because of the first source, vatat briti tishmar, they're not part of the covenant, or the second source, himol yimol, a person who has a bris milah is obligated to do a bris milah. Okay, my Beinayu's second line and source back in source number two in the Gemara Avodah Zarah, what's the difference between the two sources? They both yield the same result, which is a Gentile cannot do a bris milah. No, the answer is Aravi mahul v'gavnuni mahul ikav Beinayu. There are Arabs, in fact, apparently in the old days, many, many people in the Middle East were circumcised. That's the difference. Why? Man da'amar himol yimol ikav. According to the Mandalma, that a person who has a bris milah is chayev to give a bris milah, then if you happen to be one of the B'nai Keturah, right, descendants of Avraham, who are not part of the Jewish people, then you have the mitzvah of bris milah. Umandalma et briti tishmor leka. But according to the Mandalma, that the mitzvah is only given to Jews, then you don't. Okay, the Gemara has a whole conversation, and the Gemara has another point. There's a big difference between the two sources. Ela ike beinayu isha. Gemara says, no, the real difference between the two sources is a woman. How does it work? Leman da'amar va'ato et briti tishmor leka. De isha lav bas milahi. According to the man da'amar that you learn it from the pasuk et briti tishmor, she is not commanded in this mitzvah, so she's not part of the mitzvah. Uleman da'amar himol yimol. Strangely, the Gemara says, but according to the man da'amar who says, a person who is circumcised should circumcise others, ika, she's obligated. Wait, she's not circumcised. Says the Gemara, an interesting thing. De'isha kiman de'mehele damya. No, a woman is seen as if she has a bris milah. It's fascinating. You would have just thought that a woman is not in the parsha of Bris Mila. If she doesn't have a foreskin, obviously, there's nothing to discuss. But apparently, according to this man, the Amar, since she's Jewish and she doesn't have a foreskin, it's as if she has a Bris Mila, and therefore she is part of the obligation to circumcise others or to circumcise our own son. Okay, now the Gemara gets to our point. Wait. Is there anybody who claims a woman can't do a bris mila? It's our story in this week's parsha. Tzipora is recorded in the Torah as having done a bris mila on her son. Now it gets even stranger. We thought the story was difficult enough. Says the Gemara, no. Kari be vatakach. It sounds like she did it, but what it means is she didn't do it. She got somebody else to do it. I vaksiv vatichrod. It says she cut off the arla. Kari be vatachrat. No, somebody else did it for her. The amra le'inish achrin of avad. She asked somebody else. Okay, she asked somebody else. He did it. V'i ba yisema, or another possibility. Asya ihi va'askalano. She started the process. Va'asa Moshe u'gimara. And Moshe came and completed it. So I can't tell you how difficult this is, but the Gemara seems to dismiss as proof that Tzipora did it. The Gemara rereads the text of this week's parsha to say it sounds like she did it, but she didn't really do it. Somebody else did it. Either she got a man to do it, or Moshe Rabbeinu completed it. Okay, so aside from, you know, how difficult this is, I'll ask a different question. They could have just said, listen, it was Horas Shah. It was Shasa Sakana. Her husband's about to die. She realizes he's about to die because he didn't circumcise his son, so she did what she did. Or claim that it was before Matan Torah. Okay, it's not a proof. It's true, Tzipora did the Bris Mila, but it was before Matan Torah. For some reason, you know, the Gemara has to explain the story in this week's Parsha that despite the simple reading of the Psukim, it really wasn't her. Okay, I wish I could tell you that I was prepared to explain why the Gemara feels that way. I'm not. I'm putting it out there and everybody can think about it. And to the extent you're saying to yourselves, I have much more questions this week than answers, yeah, it happens.
Eli, does any Gemara deal with the idea that it didn't happen on the eighth day?
Almost certainly it didn't happen on the eighth day. How could it be, one second, how could it be that God wanted to punish Moshe if it was still the eighth day? My assumption is it was beyond the eighth day.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Now, there's one other critical Gemara, and it's mislabeled as source number 3. I just messed up the numbering, but here we go. Famous Gemara in Kiddushin, Chav Tes Amun Aleph. The Gemara there lists the obligations of a father to his son. One of them is to circumcise him. So says the Gemara, how do we know? Lamo lo minolan. How do we know that a father has an obligation to circumcise his son? Dichsiv vayamal Avraham et Yitzchak bino. Then Avraham circumcised his son Yitzchak. Vehecha de lo mehele avuha mechaye beidina le memhele. Now we just get into famous halacha. The primary obligation of circumcision is on the father. What happens if the father doesn't do it? So the halacha is, then the secondary obligation falls on Bezdin. The Bezdin is obligated to make sure that children are circumcised. Dirsiv, himo lachem kol zachar. So the first, vayomal Avraham, that's the father. If he doesn't do it, then you have the pasuk, himo lachem kol zachar. Make sure everybody is circumcised. Vehecha de lo male beidina, the father fails and Bezdin fails. Then Michayiv ihu lemimhel napshe. Then the child himself, or the child when he grows up,
has an obligation to circumcise himself or to get someone to circumcise him. Dichsiv va'arel zachar asher lo yimol et besar arlato v'nichrita. Very important. We all know that the punishment of kares is applied, as we saw in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, if you don't have a bris milah. But it turns out it's not a punishment on the father, neither is it a punishment on Beis Din. It's a punishment only on the child himself. So, obligation on the father, then obligation on Beis Din. If both fail in their jobs, then presumably on the day of his bar mitzvah, he needs to have a party and get an aliyah and lein and make kiddush and do all those cool things. But before that, probably, and it might ruin the joy of the day, he needs to be circumcised. And it's his obligation. And if he doesn't arrange for his own circumcision, he is chayiv kares. Now, the machlok is whether he's chayiv kares on that day, or whether he's chayiv kares only at the end of his life, but it doesn't matter. It's important to note that the obligation to circumcise falls on the child himself at his bar mitzvah. Now, we're missing somebody here. Father, Beis Din, child himself, asks the Gemara, the last full line in 3 in Kedushin, Ihi minalan delo mechaiva. Wait, well, how do we know that the mother's not obligated? Right? We know the father's obligated. How do we know not the mother? Dichsiv ka'asher tziva oto elokim, oto velo ota. Another strange drasha. The pasuk says in source number, the top of the page where my cursor is, in telling us the story about the bris milah of Yitzchak Avinu, the Torah says, "Vayamal Avraham et Yitzchak bino ben shmonat yamim ka'asher tziva oto Elokim." Oto is lashon zachar, masculine. The Gemara has another strange limud. It says, "Ka'asher tziva oto Elokim," God commanded him and not her. Therefore, fathers are obligated in bris milah and not mothers. Okay, now, you could ask easily, why are you taking the source from the circumcision of Yitzchak? That's just a narrative, right? That just explains that Avraham did it. Kashet siva uto alokim, that's descriptive. It's not proscriptive. The grammar is correct, as God commanded him. But it doesn't mean not her. Nevertheless, that's the drasha of the Gemara. It's as if in all of these sources, and I don't mean this, God forbid, in a sexist way, but it's as if the Gemara knew all along that women are not commanded in the mitzvah of bris milah. And each time you bring forward some proof or some theory under which they might be, it's rejected by the Gemara. All of this makes the halacha really kind of interesting or not understandable. Look at source number 4. Here's the Rambam. Hilchos Mila Perek Bet Halacha Aleph. Says the Rambam, Hakol Kisheirim Lamul, anybody can do a bris milah. Va'afilu Arel, a person who himself is not circumcised. Ve'eved. Ve'isha, that's our case, women. Ve'katan, you know, children younger than bar mitzvah, malin b'makom she'ein sham ish. Okay, the Gemara makes clear, the Rama makes clear, presumably the first choice is a man who's bar mitzvah to be the moel. But if such a person is unavailable, anybody else can do it, including women. So you ask yourself, wait, I don't get it. Does the Rama not know the Gemara's? We just saw 2 Gemaros that say that women are not obligated in the mitzvah of bris milah. So how could the Rambam and many people who follow the Rambam afterwards say that a woman can do a bris milah if a man's not available? How can that be? Anybody? All right, I'll tell you. The answer is that we confuse
an obligation with an ability. And by that I mean, the Gemara says women are not obligated. The Gemara does not say women are not able. There's a big difference, okay? I am commanded to circumcise my son. My wife is not commanded to circumcise our sons. But that doesn't mean that my wife can't do it. It means that when she does it, perhaps she doesn't fulfill an obligation, but the result is that our son is circumcised, right? That's a very, very big point, and particularly when we talk about women's obligations in mitzvos. Because it could very well be that a woman, for all the reasons we know, is not obligated in a mitzvah, but that doesn't necessarily mean that she can't do the mitzvah. Often we confuse the two, and here's maybe the best example that it's not true. The Gemara is clear, women are not obligated in the mitzvah of Bris Milah, and the Rambam is clear that a woman can do Bris Milah. Yes, the Rambam says better to have a man, presumably because he's obligated, but if you can't, then a woman could do it. And the Rambam follows this up in the Sefer HaMitzvos in source number 5 and says as follows, Va'amitzvah Reish Tezvav 2:15, He shet sivanu lamula tabein. We are commanded to circumcise our sons. V'amaro yitalela Avraham, the psukim that we read at the beginning, at the circumcision of Avraham and his oldest son Yishmael, himo lachem kol zachar. V'katuv ba'torah, shehu b'karet mishem v'atel mitzvat asei zo. V'hu amaro v'arel zachar asher lo yimolet b'sar or latov v'nichrita. Okay, if you didn't do it to yourself, you get kares. And now if you go to the last full line, the Rambam says, V'ein ha'isha mitzuva lamulet bina. A woman is not commanded to circumcise her son. And now the Rambam adds something that you can't help missing. Kimo sheha'av mitzuva bezeh. Kimo shehit ba'er b'kiddushin. The Rambam says, it's a different formulation. A woman is not commanded in the mitzvah the way her husband is commanded in the mitzvah. Here the Rambam kind of fudges it. It sounds like the Rambam acknowledges that perhaps there is some obligation on the woman. It's just not the same as the obligation on her husband. Or if we had to suggest something, perhaps we could suggest that a woman, perhaps the Rambam is saying, just like the obligation exists on the father primarily, then it moves to Beis Din. You know, maybe at some point it moves to the woman, maybe not as a mitzvah, but as something that she's obligated to make sure happens. How would that play out? Well, let's first look at the Shulchan Aruch, right? Ask ourselves, how do we paskin? So says the Shulchan Aruch in source number 6 on the sheet, Hakol kisherim lamul. Everybody is kosher, is qualified to do a bris milah. It doesn't mean everybody. I couldn't. But it means, you know, if you're trained. Afilu eved, this is from the Rambam. Afilu eved, isha v'katan v'arel yisrael shemetu echav machmat milah. He changes a little bit from the Rambam. He says, no, if you're uncircumcised, but there's a reason for you being uncircumcised, you could do it also. But again, his point is, women are on that list. Who comes first? So he says, V'im yesh Yisrael gadol sheyodea lamul. If there is a male who's above bar mitzvah, who knows how to do it, hu kodem lekulam. So then he goes first, and he should get the mitzvah. And then he says, V'yesh omrim di'isha lo tamul. There are those who say that a woman shouldn't do it. V'chein nohagim lahader acharish. And so the minhag is, where a man is available, he should do it. But it sounds like where a man is not available, I don't know, you're in some place where there's no moel. Okay, the only person who knows how to do it is a surgeon who happens to be a woman. It seems pretty clear that even if she doesn't have a mitzvah, she could still do it. And the result would be that your son is circumcised. So really what we're seeing here is that there are probably three levels in obligation. Start at the bottom. A Gentile, doesn't matter that the Gentile surgeon does exactly, physically speaking, that which is required to do a bris milah. It looks like a bris milah, but it's not a bris milah because he is not part of the mitzvah of milah. Then on the other end of the spectrum, you have the father. He is absolutely obligated to do bris milah. And when he does it, not only is his son circumcised, but he is yotze his mitzvah of being mal his son. In the middle are women who are not commanded to do the mitzvah and on whom the mitzvah doesn't apply to the extent that they don't fulfill their own obligation. Nevertheless, in the Rambam and in the Shulchan Aruch, it's clear that if they did it, they would be yotze the mitzvah. Yes, they're not obligated, but nevertheless, they're Jewish. They're part of the covenant and they're part of the obligation. Okay, so here we see an important halachic concept that there might be a difference between people who fulfill their own personal obligation in doing something and other Jews who may not fulfill their own personal obligation, but might be responsible for getting a mitzvah done. So for example, let's say, you know, in the Weber household, my wife lights candles on Friday. But presumably when I remind her, or when I put out the candles myself, if I ever did it, or if I found the matches, if I ever knew where they were, maybe it's not my mitzvah, but it's clear that I've helped a mitzvah to occur. Avram.
All right. Am I on?
You are on.
Right. Okay. So my guess is that in the former Soviet Union, where there probably were a number of women who were doctors, again, was forbidden to do, it probably happened more than once that you would have this situation, a qualified woman surgeon who could do a brit milah because it might have been dangerous for a husband or somebody else to do it.
I agree completely. I'm sure it's happened many, you know, it was a whole discussion. I didn't look it up. Like in the Middle Ages, apparently there were women who did it. Okay, it's clear for whatever reason that nowadays, you know, the Rambam makes very clear, the first choice is a person who himself is obligated, and that's the father, or in our case, the moel. But yeah, if there was no other choice, then it's clear that a woman could do it. Now, I've been discussing to, yeah, Bruce, quick.
Do these people that do it have to know that they're doing it for a mitzvah as opposed to just being Jewish?
It doesn't sound that way. I can't tell you for sure, but you know, presumably that ties in to the machlokas of whether mitzvah strichos kavana or not, right? And presumably this being an act-based mitzvah, even if lechatchila mitzvah strichos kavana, which is a machlokas b'dieved, you know, your child is a mahul or is circumcised. Now, this goes to a bigger point, and that is, and it's a big point in bris milah, but it's also a big point in other areas of halacha, and that is, what exactly is the mitzvah, right? Is the mitzvah to circumcise, or is the mitzvah to be circumcised? There's a huge difference. And let's go to source number 8. The Maharach HaRzor, it's very famous. He's an early Rishon. Says, Umeinyan Hamila, from the idea behind Bris Mila, Nira, De'ein Ha'av Chayav Lamul Bino Biyadav, Ela La'asok She'yehein Nimo. The Maharach HaRzor says there is a new status in Halacha. Bris milah isn't what we would call a mitzvah biyadai. It's not a mitzvah shebaguf. We don't have to circumcise our sons.
What's our mitzvah? Our mitzvah is to make sure that our sons are circumcised. Right? I assume overwhelmingly, those of us, you know, learning together now, we did not circumcise our sons. We asked somebody else to do it. That guy is called the Moel. But we didn't do it ourselves. So one possibility is, okay, you made a shaliach. Shlucho shalom kamo. So a shaliach is as if you did it yourself. Therefore, really, we did circumcise our sons. But according to Marav or Zeruah, it doesn't matter. The mitzvah was never a personal mitzvah to circumcise our sons. The mitzvah was to make sure that our sons were circumcised. He says, how do I know this? Dumya de kolhani de chashiv hasam. Because bris milah is no different than all of the other father-son obligations that are listed in the Gemara and Kedushin that we saw. What's on the list? Lelamdo Torah, to teach him Torah. Lelamdo umnus, to teach him a profession. Lohushito benahar, to teach him how to swim. V'chilo yiskor melamed livno l'toro l'chalhani. He said, could it possibly be that if you send your son to yeshiva and you don't teach him himself, yourself, that you're not yotzei the mitzvah? He says, of course not, right? If you send your son to university and you pay tuition, you're not teaching your son a profession? If you send your son to a swimming teacher, you don't, yeah, of course. So he said he takes as a given that you're responsible to make sure your son is circumcised. You don't have to do it with your own hands. Ela kolhani ikar mitzvatan enoha asiya. Ela shehamila chatuma bibsoro. He says the mitzvah of bris milah is that your son is circumcised. Or the mitzvah of bris milah is that I'm circumcised. V'chein yeshivato basuka. V'chein tfilin hamunachim b'rosho u'bizro'o. U'mila gam hi ikar mitzvata kein. He says, sitting in the sukkah is not the mitzvah. It's being in the sukkah. You know, putting tefillin on is not the mitzvah. Wearing tefillin or having tefillin on is the mitzvah. Being circumcised is the mitzvah. She'im lo kein, if that were not the case, David HaMelech Alav HaShalom, Shehayam Mitzta'er Kishenichnas L'merchatz, V'ra'a Atzma Aron B'lo Mitzvah. This is a strange Gemara. The Gemara says that David HaMelech was in a bathhouse. And all of a sudden he was sad because he wasn't wearing tefillin. He wasn't doing any mitzvahs. He had no mitzvah. So Nizkar Al HaMilah. The Gemara says, no, he comforted himself by reminding himself that he was circumcised. Says the Gemara, wait. V'imlo haya mitzvah hamila elaha asiya. If the mitzvah of mila is doing the bris mila, not being mahol, lama samach alel yoter mi rosh v'zro v'chol gufo shekiyem bohem mitzvah tefillin v'tzitzit v'kama mitzvot. He says, if the mitzvah was doing it, why would looking at the makom hamila make him happier than looking at his arm where he puts tefillin on his arm, looking at his head where he puts, you know, looking at his whole body where he puts tzitzis on his whole body? He says, no. What's clear from that Gemara is that the mitzvah is a status. The status of being mahul is the mitzvah and not doing it. Therefore, last line, Ela milahi mitzvah b'chaleit, kitfilin hamunachim b'rosho v'tzitzit b'bigdo. Now, he says bris milah is a status mitzvah. It applies all the time. And therefore, even when you're not doing anything, you are right. All of each of us right now is being mekayim the mitzvah of being circumcised. Okay, like, I don't know what reward we get. Obviously, you know, we're like that our whole lives.
I have a question to ask you.
I bet you do. Go ahead.
Okay. If Zipporah did it because Moshe couldn't do it. Why couldn't his wife do it? The same thing.
Whose wife?
The boy's wife, because her husband couldn't do it, so she did it.
Okay, so again, that's probably the halacha, as we pointed out. for some reason, the Gemara rejects Tzipora as a precedent for women doing bris milah. The Gemara has this bizarre limud that even though the psukim sound like she did it, she didn't really do it. You know, a man did it or somebody helped. But again, we don't need that because the halacha is, as we saw from the Rambam and then in Shulchan Aruch, that even though bris milah is not a mitzvah for women, they can still do it. Now, it might work better with what we just read in the Ma'arach or Zohar in source number 8, that bris milah is not the act, it's making sure that the status is achieved. The status is that you are circumcised. And so on that basis, you know, the father could give it to a shaliach. The mother could arrange for it to be done, either directly or, if, you know, if she can't find somebody else, she could do it herself. Because the obligation is to make sure that your son is circumcised. Okay, now this, you know, the question is, how many other mitzvahs might there be like that, that are status mitzvahs? So probably a bunch of mitzvahs that fit into a category of, let's put it this way, you know, the regular time-bound obligations, mitzvot aseh, that we're obligated to do, they're not status mitzvahs, meaning it's clear. We have to wear tefillin. I have to wear tefillin. I have to hear shofar. I have to eat matzah. I have to sit in a sukkah. I have to take a lulav. I have to make kiddush. Yes, it's true that sometimes a shliach can do it for you. But these are clearly act-based mitzvot that we are obligated to do. But what if you move into a house and the guy before you left the mezuzah up? So it's clear you don't have a mitzvah to hang up a mezuzah. You have a mitzvah to make sure that a mezuzah is hanged. I think hung on your door. Right now, it may be frustrating if somebody does it, and there's a whole discussion in the Gemara. Like, what if somebody steals a mitzvah? The classic case in the Gemara is that you did shechita, and there's blood on the ground. And somebody runs in and covers the blood, does the mitzvah of kisui hadam for you. He literally steals your mitzvah. Okay, so the Gemara says he has to pay you because he stole your mitzvah. But the bottom line is the mitzvah has been done. I mean, you may have lost out. Maybe it's frustrating that you didn't get to hang up a mezuzah. But the obligation doesn't exist. Do it this way, okay? You come to your son's bris milah, but you're stuck in traffic and you're late. And somebody else jumped in and did it. So there's no question your son is a mahul. Yes, you're pretty angry. I mean, not as angry as if somebody already ate your bagel and lox. That'd really be tragic. No, you got there in time for the bagel and lox, but you didn't get to do the mitzvah. So the answer is, of course you were yotzei the mitzvah. I'm sorry, the mitzvah was done. It's as if, yeah, it sounds funny to say, it's exactly as if somebody hung up a mezuzah for you. Somebody built a railing around your porch. Yes, it was your obligation to do it, but somebody fulfilled the obligation. The obligation is no longer there. And so probably that's the status of a woman. The woman made sure that the child is circumcised. And that's it. That's all that matters. Yes, maybe somebody didn't get credit for a mitzvah, but the mitzvah was fulfilled. Arthur, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. In light of the story of Moshe and Tzipora, why did we discontinue Brit Milah for the 40 years in the desert? Because if you use the excuse that, well, you could travel any minute, what do you think they were doing? They were traveling. So I don't understand.
But that's exactly the point. And in fact, just to make clear that I have thought of the same issue as you, look at source number 9. Here's a pasuk in Yoshua. They're coming into the land of Israel. Ba'etahi amar Hashem al Yoshua, asei lecha charvot zurim. It sounds like a sword, but we make a knife. Vishuv mol et b'nei Yisrael shenit. And once again, let's have a mass circumcision.
What do you mean once again? So the pasuk says, "Ki mulim hayu kal ha'am hayotzeim." Everybody who left Egypt was in fact circumcised. V'chol ha'am hayilodim b'midbar b'derech b'tzeitam mi'mitzrayim lo malu. But in the midbar, they were not circumcised. Now, the pasuk doesn't seem judgmental. The pasuk doesn't seem to criticize Klal Yisrael. And so my understanding, at least, and Arthur, you could say if you disagree, is exactly our story. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to circumcise his youngest son because he had to travel and it was dangerous. Therefore, during 40 years in the Midbar, where any day we may be commanded to travel, so they didn't circumcise. And now that they're coming into the land of Israel, life is changing and they're going back to being circumcised. Does that not work for you, Arthur?
No.
Why not?
Because because Moshe was traveling also. If Moshe was traveling to do a mitzvah, to go back to Mitzrayim, you would expect that he would be exempt from the mitzvah of Mila until he got there. Which is what happened here.
I want to be clear. I raised that point at the beginning because I think it's a strong question. The Gemara says, nah, he wasn't punished for not circumcising his son because of travel. He was punished because once they got to the motel, and I guess the sense was maybe his son was going to stay there. Maybe it was like the Motel 6 of Alexandria. So it was like right outside. I don't know. But the Gemara is with you. The Gemara says, of course, Moshe couldn't be punished for not circumcising his son because there's a pitur of not circumcising your son if you have to travel, and particularly if God himself commanded you to travel. You know, I agree with you. It's one of the real
problems. But God didn't say don't do Brit.
It's one of the real problems in the story.
Unless we're just not told about it.
Don't know. But I told you from the start, and usually like I raise questions at the start and then I answer them at the end. Not today.
Okay.
We each need to work on this a lot. The story is bizarre.
Okay. I have one other question. Woman is a shliach mitzvah here. It is a problem. Because, you know, like, for example, we learn in the Mishnah in Sukkot about if an adult male is reciting Hallel for someone, it has to be an adult male. It can't be a woman, a minor, a bondsman, etc. Since she is not, according to the way the Gemara seems to say, that she is not obligated to be the person who does Brit, therefore, how can she do the Brit and it be kosher?
So the answer is she's not a shaliach. She's just getting it done. It's true. She doesn't have the mitzvah. And so she couldn't fulfill your obligation. But that's the Maharash Azura says, who cares whose obligation it is? If at the end of the day, what we need is to have a child be circumcised, a woman can fulfill that obligation. It's true. She doesn't get the mitzvah. I'll give you an example. Maybe this is helpful, maybe it's not. We think that the mitzvah of shofar is to hear the sound. That's why the bracha we make is lishmoa kol shofar. We don't have to blow, we just have to hear. Well, if that's the case, why can't a Gentile blow shofar? Why can't we hear a recording on Rosh Hashanah? Why can't we use a microphone? And the answer is because the thing you have to hear has to be a halachic act. And if a Gentile does it, it's not a halachic act. Here, what the Gemara is saying...
So if a woman stood up and made the brachot...
What the Gemara is saying here is that there is an in-between status where a woman doesn't have the obligation to do a bris milah. So if she didn't, she wouldn't be violating anything. But when she does it, it has halachic status. She's in between. She's certainly not, God forbid, a Gentile. She just doesn't carry the primary obligation. So whereas if a Gentile surgeon circumcised somebody, the child needs hatafas dam bris because the way that the child became circumcised was not a circumcision. But if a woman does it, even though she's not obligated, the act she does is a halachic circumcision. And in fact, the child is a mahul. Now, last thought before we wrap up. We can sort of just summarize really quickly by saying we have a story. We don't understand any of it. The part we think we understand is that the mother of Moshe's children circumcised one of them. The Gemara seems to reject that because the Gemara is convinced that women are not obligated in the mitzvah of Bris Milah. But what we learned through all of that was they may not be obligated, but they can still do it. And when they do it, what they did was a mitzvah. They're not obligated to do. And the answer is, well, there's this in-between status. And the in-between status is that even people who are not obligated can fulfill a halachic obligation. I'm not sure. What happens if an 8-year-old put up the mezuzah on your front door? What if a Gentile did? So I think there, it's fine. You don't have to take it off because there's no obligation to put on a mezuzah. There's an obligation that there be a halachic mezuzah on your front door. Okay? But then there's another category of mitzvos, like bris milah, like shofar, where no, it's not just the act. The act has to be done by somebody who's halachically capable of doing it. And the chiddush of a woman in bris milah is that even though she's not commanded, when she does it, it is a halachic act. Okay? There's much more to be said. I feel bad that we didn't answer many of the questions. I think on the halachic side, we have a pretty good sense, right? The father is obligated primarily. If he doesn't do it, the bezdin has to do it. If they don't do it, the child has to do it when he becomes bar mitzvah. And if the child doesn't do it, he is chayiv kares. But in all of this, there is room for the mother. There's room for the mother like there's room for anybody, even if she's not obligated to do the mitzvah. If she does it, the mitzvah is fulfilled either because, like the Maracha or Zerua, the act doesn't matter. It's just the result of the act. Although clearly even he realizes that the act has to be a halachic act. And the woman is enough obligated so that she can do the halachic act, even if she's not obligated. All right, but everybody needs to spend time looking at those three psukim about the story of Tzipora and looking at Mefarshim, because they're fascinating and they're difficult, and we ought to invest in it. Have a great, great week. See everybody next week.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.